Yeah, when I saw the first X-Files movie in the theater, I don't know when that came out, must have been mid to late 90s, late 90s. But I went with my friend Ryan's family, and like half his family went. My friend Nick and I went, my friend Ryan, of course, and then for some reason his uncle went, his uncle Dan. So we went and saw the X-Files movie, and Uncle Dan tagged along. And afterward, through some sort of stroke of cosmic genius, like just my friend Nick and I rode home with Uncle Dan, who we had met, but we don't really know this guy. You know, he's like a construction worker or something. And so Nick and I, you know, this isn't our uncle, but it just ended up us three riding home with him. And I remember Nick asked him, he was like, "So what'd you think of the movie?" And he goes, "Well, you know, it was good. A little bit far-fetched." And we were just so amused by that. Because, you know, he just saw an X-Files movie. He just saw the X-Files movie. And he had no idea what he was seeing. You know, he just saw a movie. He just saw a movie. Like, he saw it through completely objective eyes, you know, just. He has no idea about X-Files lore. He has no idea who the fuck Mulder and Scully are. He has no idea, like, what the background is. And then, two, you know, I only saw the movie that one time. I only saw that first X-Files movie that one time in the theater. But what I remember of it is that you really had to have watched the show. You know, it didn't feel like a movie adaptation where, oh, you can just enjoy this for what it is. What I remember of it is you really had to have watched the show to even halfway understand what was going on. And so this guy, Uncle Dan, he's just like, "Oh, you guys are seeing a movie." And he went along with us. And then just his response, you know, "Oh, it was good. A little bit far-fetched." Because it's like it's an X-Files movie. Of course, it's far-fetched. But just the idea that, you know, this guy has no idea what he's even watching. This guy has no idea. And speaking of like that ride home, like, you know, I talk on here about those, you know, one-time only combos of people. Like the one time that you and, say, two other people hung out, that combination of people. You know, you have some friends and people you know where, you know, that combination of you is going to hang out hundreds, thousands of times in your life. At least dozens. But that combo of people that you hang out with one time, and it's one time only. I'm always fascinated by that for some reason. Like, this is a rare combo of people. It's like totally unknown chemistry. So that ride home, or it's just Uncle Dan, like my friend Ryan's Uncle Dan. Ryan's not in the car with us, and then just me and Nick. Just a funny combo. And that he has no idea what he just watched. Like, he saw the X-Files movie, and he was just sitting there, like, trying to make sense of it. Because, like, I think at that point, I wasn't totally up to date on what had been going on the X-Files anyway, so I was a little bit confused. I had watched a ton of X-Files up to that point, but I think I was a little out of the loop on the plot, because what I remember is the movie just riffed on that whole ongoing conspiracy plot. It was really something. It was just kind of a continuation of the storyline that they had already been playing out on the episodes. A little bit far-fetched. But yeah, just that rare combo. And you know, the X-Files is funny too, because I think I mentioned this before at some point, but there had been a traveling X-Files convention I went to when I was in probably fifth grade. Fourth grade, fifth grade, somewhere around there. Must have been fifth grade. It was like 97. And, you know, every weekend, the X-Files was, you know, it was really considered a cool people show at the time. If someone watched the X-Files, they were cool. It was for cool, smart people. And my sister and all her friends, they were in high school, and they were all into it. And every Sunday night, you know, her boyfriend and like a rotating cast of other friends of theirs would come over and we'd all watch it. We'd all gather around the TV in the dark and watch the new X-Files episode. And then just one day, like, this isn't something that we knew about far in advance. There was just one weekend where I think my sister found out or something and was like, "Hey, you know there's an X-Files convention in Bellevue this weekend? Let's go. Like, this wasn't something we hadn't even heard of this like 2 weeks earlier. This is something just spur of the moment. We're all X-Files fans, and we just find out randomly there's a traveling X-Files convention coming to the next town over. And it was big. We went to it. There were a ton of people there. It was a big thing. They had actors from the show. You know, they didn't have, you know, Gillian Anderson or David Duchovny, but they had the guy, like, the main lone gunman, the guy with the long blonde hair and the glasses. You know, he's part of the lone gunman group on there. The nerdy hacker, I don't even remember what they do. But he was there, and he spoke. Yeah, I'm trying to remember. Like, I almost feel like the guy who played Skinner was there, but I don't think so. Because that would have been a big deal. But there were definitely, I'd say there were like five speakers. Maybe one of them was, you know, someone like a producer or director or something. A couple actors. One thing I remember, though, is they did a Q&A with the audience, and this guy raised his hand, and he said, "Why does David pronounce Oregon Oregon? Like, why does David mispronounce Oregon?" And I remember, like, whoever the person answering questions was, it might have been the lone gunman guy, just, like, put the guy in his place. It was just like, what? What are you asking? You know, because it's true. Like, on the show, David Duchovny, I guess, mispronounced Oregon and said Oregon. But that's, you know, just ultimate nerd question. You know, you could ask any question about the X-Files, and your question is like, why does David mispronounce Oregon? You know, basically, you know, just a... And the guy was very smug in asking it. Although that gets me thinking, you know, because that had to have passed through, you know, you wonder if that was deliberate, because... One thing you don't really see in movies and TV is people mispronouncing things unless it's sort of part of a gag. You know, they'll have a character mispronounce things in movies as sort of a gag. Like, oh, look at this idiot. Oh, look at this fool. But you don't really have characters. Because, I mean, I mispronounce a ton of words in real life. Everybody mispronounces words. But you won't see a character in a movie mispronounce things unless they're making a point of it, like some sort of joke or gag. So the idea that, like, Mulder's character mispronounces Oregon, Oregon, is actually realistic. You know, a guy who, I don't know, I guess Mulder's based out of Baltimore, Washington, D.C. or something. I want to say they're based out there, they're FBI agents. But, I mean, it's realistic that a guy who, you know, doesn't live near Oregon, although, you know, everybody, I feel like, knows how to pronounce the states. But it's crazy because it means that David Duchovny didn't know how to pronounce Oregon. You know, that's what it tells you. So it's realistic in that way. Like, here's a guy who doesn't know how to pronounce Oregon. The actor doesn't know how to pronounce it. And that mispronunciation made its way onto the show. And nobody stopped it. Nobody who was involved with making the show was like, David, you're pronouncing it wrong. They just let it slip or didn't know better. Or it was deliberate. Or maybe it's an example of what I'm talking about, where maybe it was an example of like, hey, let's have this character mispronounce that, just because that's realistic. People mispronounce things. See, I'm thinking as much about it as that nerd at the convention who asked the question. Why does David mispronounce Oregon? Oregon. Why is he mispronouncing Oregon? That guy had a really good question. Really good question, sir. But the funny thing is, at the X-Files convention, we actually saw another family. It was this kid who was, you know, kind of a, you know, like a fringe friend of mine. It was a kid I knew my whole life. I went over to his house once, like later in high school. We kind of hung out in the same circle. He was never really my good friend, but I saw him and his family. And was just like, oh, hey, we're both cool. There's a cool family. We're the only families we know at the X-Files convention. My favorite part about it, though, was they had a room with a bunch of objects from the show, like props. And it was amazing. Obviously it was a sort of museum feeling where you're walking around looking at these special objects. But they really did feel like some sort of like mystical items. You know, it didn't just feel like I've seen movie props. Like you go to Planet Hollywood or, you know, one of those places and they have like, here's the kimono so-and-so wore in this movie. Here's the baseball bat that they used in Angels in the Outfield. You know, I've seen a number of movie props in my life. I've been to museums. I've been to Planet Hollywood. I've been to the Hard Rock Cafe. And but you know, so it's not just that like there's always something kind of magical about movie props, which there is. You know, no matter, even if you're not a huge movie guy like me, you know, I'm not a huge movie guy, I still see something like a prop from a movie and I'm like, oh, look at it. So, you know, I'm impressed by props for whatever reason. They do have some sort of like magical ability. Like this was used in a magic ritual that I viewed on screen. This was part of something immortal and powerful. But those X-Files props were on a whole other level. One of them that I remember they had was the Erlenmeyer flask. There was an episode. I don't even remember the significance. I don't even remember the significance of what the flask even was on the show, but it was called the Erlenmeyer flask. And I remember like looking at that, and it really was like looking at a grail or something. You know, it really was looking at some sort of chalice, some ancient chalice. I'm like, this is an important artifact. Some other things from the show as well. And I was completely obsessed with that Squeeze and Tombs. There were two episodes. One was a sequel to the other. I consider that really the first real X-Files movie. And they did the episode called Squeeze. It's about this guy who can like squeeze through tight spaces, like air ducts and stuff. And rips people's livers out and eats them and has like this weird hive he lives in covered in bile. And he, by eating people's livers, he becomes immortal. He keeps himself alive. Really terrifying. I mean, that episode made me genuinely scared of air vents and air ducts. And even to this day, when I see an air duct, I think of that. It terrified me, but I loved it. And they did a sequel episode about it too, called Tombs, because the guy's name was Eugene Victor Tombs. And my friends, we were all just completely obsessed with that episode. Thought about it a ton, talked about it endlessly. It really created something in our minds. And not even so much the plot, not even, you know, the part about him like harvesting people's livers and all that. Didn't even really think about that. It was just the premise of this guy who can, you know, squeeze through tight spaces and climb through air ducts and air vents and things. He could like dislocate his body and I think elongate himself. It was really well done. But I was completely obsessed with that. And I remember at the X-Files convention, I bought a pack of X-Files trading cards, and some of them were artistic renditions. They were like paintings inspired by the show, and they had some paintings of Tombs from those episodes, the guy from those episodes, that were even more terrifying than the show. So I was really into that. So the X-Files had a strong power over me at the time. You know, it really did something for my imagination in a dark and good way. Did something for me in a dark and good way. I should have told him that if I had the words for it. I was too young to describe it that way. But at the convention, I should have raised my hand and said, I am a 10-year-old, and this really does something for me in a dark and good way. It did, though. And years later, I saw the second movie. That must have been, I don't know, 15 years ago? Somewhere around that. I took my girlfriend at the time to go see it, and she was a big X-Files fan. And, you know, back then, too, you know, the first decade of the 2000s, having the X-Files in common with a girl was a really good thing. It was a really cool thing you could relate over. It meant something. Like, if you were talking to a girl and, like, she knew a lot about the X-Files and you knew a lot about the X-Files, instant connection. You know, it could become like a thing. Like, even if you were like me and, like, hadn't thought about the X-Files for years, just the fact that I had, you know, it was important to me during my formative years, and I remembered a lot, like, instant connection, instant chemistry. But we went to go see the second X-Files movie the night it came out. We went to the midnight showing, and it was just so fucking bad. Just a really bad movie. And I hadn't caught up with the show. Like, I hadn't seen the show in a very long time. Like, the very last episode I saw was the one where Mulder kills himself. But then it turns out he didn't. I think that was the very last. I think I might have seen a couple episodes from the next season where you find out he's still alive. That would have been a great end to the show if Mulder just killed himself. Perfect ending. They don't end shows like that, you know. Great ending. But, that would have been, like, the last era I watched it in. So there had been all this stuff that had happened. T-1000 had been on the show. Like, I know they brought the X-Files back, and Robert Patrick, a.k.a. T-1000, he played, like, he replaced Mulder. And then even later, they brought on... like Mulder again, so it was like a trio. It was like Robert Patrick, David Duchovny, and Gillian Anderson. And it's funny, you know, speaking of her, never into her. You know, she's a good example of someone who's pretty, but I do not find her sexually attractive in the least. I don't find her sexually or romantically attractive at all. And tons of people I know do. I've known tons of people who have been like, man, she's my celebrity crush. Oh, dude, she's fucking hot. Dude, she's fucking sucking hot. So fucking sucking hot. You know, I've known a number of people who are really into her. And I don't, it's not one of those things where it's like, really? How could you be into her? Like, I understand she's beautiful. I understand she's beautiful. She's a good example, though, of just personal preference where I'm not attracted to her. I'm not attracted to her. I don't know what it is. Like, even if that was a girl in person that I met, I'd be like, she's pretty, but I'm not really that into her. I don't know. I lost track, and then I saw this movie in the theater. I took my girlfriend to go see the second X-Files movie, and when I left, I said to her, I said, that's pretty good. A little bit far-fetched. I had no idea what was going on. I just remember there's a scene where Mulder is reunited with Skinner and they dramatically embrace. And the other thing, too, is it starts out with Mulder and Scully are together. They're in bed together and they're a couple. And I don't know if they introduced that on the show in the years that I didn't watch it, but the second movie just starts out and they're a romantic couple. They're together. They live together. And I was like, it's a fucking sucking lame thing to do. You know, what made the show good is there was no romantic interest between them. That's what made the show good, is that they were this, you know, odd couple, and maybe there'd be a joke or two at times, but just there was never any push to make them romantically linked. And so going to see the second movie and being completely out of the loop on that, I was just like, what the fuck, I was just not into it. And then there's a scene where I remember, like, Skinner, I think, is kidnapped or something, or Mulder's kid, one of them's kidnapped, and then he escapes, and then they run into each other in a parking lot, and there's, like, this really dramatic scene where they hug each other. Oh, it's the first time Mulder and Skinner have seen each other in a long time. Oh, it's special. And I was just like, don't do this. And the plot of the movie, too, I don't even think it was really an X-File. It was you know, it was just some, basically a movie about, I think like Russians harvesting organs or something. With some sort of organ trafficking. I don't remember anything supernatural or government conspiracy in it. Although I wouldn't even be able to tell you what it was about. I was Uncle Dan. I got to, in that moment, even though, yeah, I grew up watching the X-Files, in that moment, watching the second X-Files movie, I got to feel what Uncle Dan felt when he saw the first one with us. And who knows if Uncle Dan ever saw the second one? Who knows if Uncle Dan got dragged to that one? He might have loved that one. This one's a little more realistic. But I do love the idea of someone who just has no idea about something and they just see it objectively. You know, because so many of the things we experience, we have some kind of context. We've either already been introduced to it in some way or we have some kind of context. And I mean, I relate to that as a kid too, because, you know, I was into so many things as a kid that had some kind of backstory. You know, it's like so many movies were about a comic book character or there was some kind of lore. There was just more to it than just the thing itself. But I think about parents and stuff, like my mom probably taking me to movies and having no idea what the heck the backstory or anything was. And it's just, to her, it's just, this is just a movie. This is just a movie. I mean, I guess that could happen with a band. You know, someone who has no idea what to expect from a band. But to me, it's funnier with a movie. It's funny to me, like someone's uncle just randomly tagging along to see a movie that really requires some kind of context to enjoy it. You really should know at least a little bit about the X-Files before you see it. You know, it's one of those movies, but to him it's just like, oh, what is this? A little far-fetched. Which tells me Uncle Dan prefers realistic movies. Because, of course, like, movies can be about anything. Like, did he go see Star Wars and say the same thing? You know, does he see a horror movie? Did he go see Alien? Did he see Aliens? Go ahead, a little far-fetched. Maybe. Dan is a fan of realism. Uncle Dan likes realism. You know, he didn't buy it on VHS. I know that much. You know, I like that movie. I'm going to get that. Movie collections. That just gets me thinking, you know. It was always interesting to go over to someone's house and see their movie collection. Because it was more of a spectacle in the VHS days. You know, with DVDs, like, yeah, people, I don't know, they had them on display, but they were slimline, you know, they were kind of easier to hide. But when you went over to a family's house, like, their VHS collection was often on display. Like, I remember in my childhood home, we had this big entertainment center in our living room, and there was a cutout in the middle for a TV, just a medium-sized TV. It wasn't a big screen TV, just a medium TV. And then on each side of it, there were basically like two like TV-sized cubbies. And we just had all of our VHSs stacked in there. And so anyone who came to our house, it's like you just, I'd watch them and they just kind of browse the movies. A lot of them had our last name written on them because you'd lend out movies and people don't give them back. A lot of families did that. It's a very funny thing people used to do. I don't know if there's really an equivalent today. I don't know who's really lending people anything these days. But then it's like families would write their name on the movie just to make sure you knew. Don't steal this. Don't forget about this. Don't forget it's mine. But like I would look, there were a ton of movies we had that I didn't even know what the fuck they were. I don't know why my family even had them. I don't remember anybody in my family ever watching them or talking about them. We just ended up with them somehow. One of them was a Frank Stallone movie. I want to say it was called Revenge. Let me look that up. I'm curious. And at the time, I didn't really... I knew, I was like, oh, this must be Sylvester Stallone's brother. But I never heard anybody talk about him. You know, I didn't, it wasn't something that was widely talked about. Like, oh yeah, Sylvester Stallone has a brother who's also an actor. I think it was Revenge or something like that. No, I'm curious. I'm using my lifeline here because I remember that it had like a picture of Frank Stallone like grabbing a woman and holding a shotgun, I feel like. I know I'm not imagining this. Websites are just unusable these days. They used to be so easy to use. They're just totally unusable. Every single website makes itself increasingly unusable by the day. Really rough. I'm trying to see what this was. It's important to me. I didn't realize he was in Tombstone because I watched that movie a lot. Was it called? No, Revenge is a different movie, but there was a Fear. Yeah, Revenge was a different movie. Fear. It's close. One, I knew it was a one-word title. And you know what? I haven't seen this movie cover since then. And it's exactly what I remembered. It's Frank Stallone holding a shotgun and grabbing a woman. And so my family just had this. And I loved action movies and stuff. But when I looked at it, I was like, this is probably boring. It says, a family living in an isolated cabin in the woods are terrorized by a gang of escaped convicts. Their leader, a serial killer, is a disturbed Vietnam veteran. What the gang doesn't know is that the family's father is also a Vietnam veteran, and he has no intention of letting his family come to any harm. I mean, that sounds fucking awesome. No joke. Like, that actually sounds like the kind of movie I like. I don't like very many movies. It's no doubt a B movie. But my family just had this. And it was just in the stack of movies, and I would look at it sometimes. But what's weird is that I never thought to watch it. Like, even though I liked Sylvester Stallone, and I liked action movies and thrillers and stuff, for some reason I just never thought to put it in. I think I just had this feeling like, oh, this is boring. I want to say Revenge. Is that like a Tom Berenger movie? Let me see. Well, I'm just looking up. Because I think we had Revenge too. I'm pretty sure we also had Revenge on VHS. So a couple of these movies, and I'm just like, you know, why do we have these? Oh, it's Kevin Costner. I didn't realize that. For some reason, there's sort of a visual similarity between Kevin Costner and Tom Berenger. Huh, yeah, I don't know. I never watched this either. I don't know why. My family had this. I mean, it's a similar sort of thing. Like, a retired U.S. Navy pilot comes to Mexico where he falls in love with the wife of a powerful businessman. The consequences will be cruel and unforeseen. So I would just look at these movies like Fear and Revenge. They were just, my family owned them. Like, who bought them? You know, who the fuck in my family bought those movies? The only thing I can imagine is that they were like dollar bin, you know, somewhere. Like some, like those movies that you would see at Blockbuster, and they're selling their old movies. That's the only thing I can imagine, is that like there was some dollar bin, some bargain bin somewhere. Like, buy five movies for $5. And my mom grabbed Revenge and Fear. Some other movies too, but those are the ones that stood out to me, because, you know, they seemed like movies that I, given my family fucking owned them, I really should have watched them at some point, right? And so I just like look at the movies, and it was a random assortment. Like, obviously there were a bunch of movies that we loved. Sometimes you'd get a movie just because it was kind of a big blockbuster and you'd just get it. You know, it wasn't the biggest movie collection, but we had a good amount of movies. We acquired them over the years. It's like my sister was into a bunch of stuff. I was into a bunch of stuff. My mom loved movies. There was stuff like Fried Green Tomatoes in there. What else? I don't know. I'm not going to sit here and just try to remember every movie we own, but some random stuff too. Like I'm talking about. I don't know how we acquired that shit. Because it wasn't like anybody in my family was like, oh, I fucking love this movie. Sometimes people would sometimes give you movies. They're like, oh, we don't really want this anymore. You want our copy of Fear? You want our copy of Revenge? And I still remember my next door neighbor and I were obsessed with the movie Dick Tracy. And I ended up getting a copy of it, and I brought it over to my friend's house next door, and his dad had just gotten like an old school clunky video camera. You know, it was like the size of a bazooka. It was like one of those big ones that you have to sit on your shoulder, and it takes a full-size VHS tape. You know, it didn't take like one of those smaller cassettes. It was, you know, you actually put a full videotape, like a full VHS, blank VHS into it. And so I brought Dick Tracy over, and I remember his dad knelt down with the video camera on his shoulder, and he while the movie played, he just recorded it. And he just sat there recording it, and I'm like, that's fucking crazy. A very like low quality bootleg, just, you know, not even dubbing it. You know, it's not like they had, you know, two VHS recorders daisy chained. You know, not even dubbing it, just sitting there filming it. Like, you can imagine the sound quality, you can imagine the video quality. Just a grainy, you know, quiet recording of Dick Tracy. And honestly, I mean, this family wasn't hurting for money either. They were doing fine. Just go buy a copy. Just go buy one, you know? Like, think about how painful that experience was that dad put himself through. Like, he was down on one knee with a video camera on his shoulder, just taping for, I don't know how long that movie is, at least 90 minutes, could be 2 hours. Just sitting there taping it the whole time. I don't know how he did it. He was a construction worker. I don't know how he did that. I don't know how he, like, did he just keep it up on his shoulder the entire time? What did he do? Just go buy a copy, man. You know, you're putting yourself through extreme discomfort. I think part of it, though, was he just liked the idea that he could do it. You know, because at that point in time, a video camera was very expensive. You know, buying like a fucking video camera was a very expensive thing. So he probably thought it was cool that he could just kind of bootleg his own movies that way. That same family, my sister was babysitting for them once. And they had a couple younger kids. They had a son who was a year younger than me, and then, you know, some younger kids who were a few years younger. And one time, like, they had like multiple girls babysitting. It was like my sister and a couple of her friends were all babysitting together, and like the little kids ran over and they were like, "Oh, let's watch this movie. It's of us water skiing." And it said water skiing on the side of this VHS. It was a home movie. And they put it in, and it was the two parents having sex. It was like a homemade sex tape. And so when I heard that, it was the funniest thing in the world. So they also used that video camera to make a homemade sex tape. But it said water skiing on the side. So they might have like taped over. They might have taped over like some video of their kids water skiing with them having sex. Or that they just wrote that on the side. But it became a code word, because like when I found that out, I told my friends about it, and it became a code word to us, like water skiing. Just comical. You know, who knows what he taped over Dick Tracy. But I remember after finding out that like they discovered this homemade sex tape of the parents that said water skiing on it, like it always like, I was always like, oh, this must be like a really sexual household. It really wasn't. You know, they weren't weird in any way, but from then on, I was like, this is a very like earthy sexual household. It just kind of changed my view of it. It's just so funny that the kids ran over and grabbed it. They're like, let's watch this. It's a videotape of us water skiing. And it's just like the parents having sex. I wonder like what it depicted. I always imagined just a grainy, dark room. What's funny about it is all these years, I never really visualized what was on the video. You know, is it a dark room? Is it well lit? What are they doing? What sort of acts are they doing? It's funny, my mind never really went there. I just kind of imagined this hazy image of two people in a dark room where you can't really see much. But they got that video camera. I mean, you know, might as well make bootleg copies of Dick Tracy, just stand in front of the TV and just record it with your camera. Might as well do that. Might as well make sex tapes.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave, this golden land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, I see a land where children